15. Mortal Measures.
I cannot bear to watch his hands clench involuntarily on the golden armrests any more. I look away. Watching them twitch and spasm tells me too much of his ordeal. I look away. I seek distraction. The room is vast by any mortal measure. It, in itself, is a sign, a symbol. It was built to suit the regal war king he once was, a grand chamber to mirror that grand aspect. He did not object, for he understood the psychological value. Down the ages, architecture has always been used to amplify the status and authority of those who rule. Here is where he set his throne. So here is the throne room built around it, quite breathtaking in its dimension and scale. He told me he remembered the great cathedrals of the old eras, the echoing naves of Chartres, Beauvais, Oaxaca Catholicon, and New Krasnodar Minster, their solemn hush, their sanctity, their symbolic manifestos of reverence. Of course, they were built to lord false gods, which is why he had them overthrown, but there was no denying their cosmetic effect. They inspired belief and obedience. They instilled awe. Those who came to engage with him needed to feel the same effect. They needed to be humbled. They needed to be reminded, beyond any shadow of doubt, that he was worth listening to. But it's just a room. It is a throne room simply because, to them, it is a room with a throne in it. Even the throne is not a throne, not as they understand the word. He does not sit here to project an aspect of exalted supremacy. The throne is a device, the most important and oldest of his key instruments. The room is simply the room where he works, the central chamber of a suite of chambers that others refer to as the dungeon, but which he thinks of as his workshop. Dungeon. Words are strange, imprecise and too easily applied. People see what they want to see. A dungeon, a throne room, a golden throne, an emperor. Just words. It is a dungeon because it is deep beneath a palace. So, of course, the word for that must be dungeon. Not workshop, or laboratorium, or studio, or additum, or temple of science, sunk deep into the living rock simply to insulate it against fluctuations of matter and immateria. Of course, it is a throne room, because it is monumental and contains a throne. Of course, he is the emperor, because what else could he be? He is what they need him to be. Of course it is a throne, for is it not massive and gilded and ornate? And does the emperor not sit upon it? The golden throne. I have long since abandoned the distraction of finding a better name for it. It is a device with many astounding applications, one of which is the moderation and manipulation of etheric power. I have always assumed that he constructed it himself, but I also assume that he incorporated into that construction pieces of relic technology. This has often been his way. He makes ingenious use of the strange treasures he has found in the course of his long life, repurposing and reverse engineering them. He did the same with the vast and baffling xeno-archaeological monument known as the Webway. We cannot know who originally constructed the Webway, or why, and we can only speculate that other cultures may have found it and used it for their own purposes before human history began. We do know, however, that the wise yet unwise Eldari inherited it, gave it its name, and used it as a subspace network of travel and communication. It is a labyrinthine subdimension that stretches across the galaxy. It permits transit to those with the will to use it. That transit is direct and comparatively swift. Moreover, that transit is entirely free of the vagaries of the warp. From this we can discern both the genius and the intent of the Eldari. They were building an interstellar culture that would not depend on the warp in any way. They conspired to shun the warp and remove it from the equation. They built under and around and above it. They limited their interaction with the warp, because they predicted that the warp would always, ultimately, consume any maturing, psychically aware species. They knew this, but it happened to them anyway. My lord and master's use of the webway echoes their intent. It was the reason he returned prematurely from the Great Crusade. He had recognized that mankind could and should not be reliant on the warp in matters such as travel and communication, and with all haste and urgency, he embarked on a program to reclaim, repair, and rebuild the webway to make it human-compatible. It was a vital part of his great work, arguably more urgent than the unifying crusade itself. But his sons did not understand that. Should he have told them? Should he have explained? And if he should have done that, why did he not? I confess, that's another story, and not mine to tell. My story is this one. His story. It is the story of mankind, of its triumphs and failures, its fortitude and its wrong turns. It began, once upon a time, millennia ago, when we were still painting our hopes and plans on walls with our fingers, and trusting in something else to watch over us. And it has been spinning out ever since like yarn, like a single precious thread, through the adumbral maze of mankind's clumsy, complex, unwieldy, and confused history. Now, here he sits, a lonely magician on a makeshift throne, with the other end of that thread in his hand. It has been his story to tell, his thread to pay out so that we did not lose our way. And it ends here, now, or never. I had hoped it would be never, but now I am not so sure. The clocks run out, and so does the spool of thread. Time has come, abstract but menacing, to demand what it is due. He has done his best. Many dispute that, but it's true. He has done his best to protect the human race from its own worst propensities, from malice and evil and the predation of others, from a future that was deemed inevitable, and most of all, from itself. I know there are many, far too many, who regard him as a monster, who reject the path he has measured with his thread, who seek to shame his ambition and wrest control from him. Well, my master does not seek approval, and he does not seek acclaim. And he absolutely never asked for permission. He has been guided by rationality and a profound belief in the potential of our species. He believes, just as I believe, that mankind can achieve what no sentient form has achieved before in the whole history of this universe. Apotheosis. Not just for him, for the entire species. He believes, and has always believed, that we can configure our own tomorrow and elude the inevitable doom of the future. For he saw, once upon a time, what no one else had seen or wanted to see. He saw that there was nothing else watching over us. No gods, no ineffable divine other, nothing guiding us or keeping us safe. We were journeying alone, and the only fate that awaited us, the only far future, was the one we would make for ourselves. Of course, there was something else, but not gods. Not gods as we would want them, or need them, or imagine them. Not providers or guardians, not gods at all. Though, like throne, it is the easiest word to use. Anagogic powers, higher things, outer things, formless and uncontrolled, annihilators that have followed in our footsteps every step of the way, symbolic reminders of the preordained doom awaiting us. Predators, watching us from the shadows as we live our lives, waiting for us to drop our guard or turn our backs. Consider again that wall long ago. The bison and the running deer, the fleeing antelope, the men with bows and spears. But if you look closely, there, at the edge, where fingers have painted trees and long grasses, there are predators, lying in wait, hardly visible, but for the tips of their ears and the glint in their eyes, biding their time, waiting for one of the men to fall behind and lose sight of his brothers. They have always been there, even though we don't see them, in the darkness at the back of the cave, in the night beyond the ring of the camp's fire, in the sun-baked cover of the scrub, watching, waiting, hungry. They are the only else, and they must be shunned and kept out. There are four of them. He knows their names. No one else should. He stole fire from those four annihilator gods and used it to keep them at bay. He wielded it in his hand, century after century, to drive them back whenever they came too close. It amused him that they flinched from their own fire. But he knew from the start it would not be enough just to keep them away. We could be vigilant, torch in hand. We could build walls to keep them outside. We could invent cities to hide in. But they would always be there. So there began the long game, his life's work. To keep us safe and remove the possibility of a future in which they got in and ate us alive, he would have to hunt them down and kill them. Except, as he quickly learned, they are not things that can die. They persist. They can only be denied and avoided. And even in that, he has failed. Or at least, is on the brink of failure. That was the plan he made on his wall. But it is not yet complete. And now the clocks run out, and tomorrow is not what he configured and promised, and we have not built our walls high enough or strong enough. They have been trying to stop us since they first became aware of his intention. And now they are at the gates to end him. I look out, extending my mind's sight to its limit. I cannot see hope or salvation. I cannot see relief coming. But I can see them, in the shadows on the long grass, bellies to the ground, prowling ever closer. So, it's come to this. He cannot fight everything at once. There isn't time. Time is our enemy. He no longer has the luxury of sitting, mastering this pain as he blocks out the warp. He must choose his battles and win each one in order of priority. He is not a god, but he has been fulfilling that role for a long time, acting in the stead of the aletheistic figments that never existed, no matter how much mankind believed in them. Though we both abhor the word and forbid its use, he has been a god, for all practical purposes, for centuries. Time is burning. The clocks have stopped. The walls collapse. I am his trusted regent. I must give my advice now. I must urge him. I must make him hear me. to redeem his plan and salvage any hope of the tomorrow he intended. He must rise. He must stop acting as a god and fight like a man.